Welcome to Locked On Cavaliers, the official Cleveland Cavaliers podcast in the Locked On Podcast Network. It's a daily show, yes daily, covering the NBA champion Cavaliers and the NBA at large. You can follow the show on Twitter at Locked On Cavs and subscribe to the show on iTunes, Stitcher, Audioboom, or Google Play. If you'd like to submit questions, inquire about an ad, or just say hi, email the show at LockedOnCavs@gmail.com. And if you're a fan of the show, please give us a rating and review on iTunes as it helps other people find the podcast. Now, here's today's show. Hello, everyone, and welcome to this episode of Locked On Cavaliers, the official Cleveland Cavaliers podcast of the Locked On Podcast Network. As always, I'm your host, Chris Manning. I'm an editor at Fear the Sword, and I'm a staff writer at Hardwood Paroxysm. Today, I am joined by, he's been on the show before, but not as a solo guest. He is actually my former podcasting partner back when we did Dot the Podcast, which you can no longer find on the internet. He's also a staff writer at Upside and Motor at Ridiculous Upside and at Fear the Sword. It's Trevor Bagnotti. Trevor, how's it going, man?
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing good. So today, we're here to talk to Trevor about this piece he wrote last week for Fear the Sword, about LeBron James's longevity and how many minutes he's played and what his future sort of looks like, considering he's played a historical amount of minutes heading into his 31-32-year season. LeBron, of course, is everything for the Cavs. He is the centerpiece. He's the reason they are title contenders year in and year out. And he's sort of, Trevor, and tell me if I'm wrong, but he's sort of an anomaly because he has literally played so many minutes at such young age, and it doesn't even factor in, really, you know, his time playing with the U.S. Olympic team and such.
Yeah, he's played, right now he's played 38,478 regular season minutes, which I believe ranks him somewhere in the late 20s all time in terms of minutes played. I may have that wrong, but it's he's on the leaderboard for minutes played after 13 seasons. Additionally, he's already one of the top five all-time in playoff minutes. He's played 8,383 playoff minutes. And you combine those two numbers and you put that on the regular season leaderboard, in just 13 seasons, he's eighth all-time in minutes played. So that's he's played an absurd amount of minutes, and there were the couple seasons that he led the league in minutes played when he was 20, 21, 22, and you know, we all know how many minutes he's played in the playoffs the last 2 years over spans of 15 to 20 games. So he's played a lot, and that kind of presents an interesting question for his longevity, because on one hand, you know, LeBron's kind of thought of as this cyborg of an athlete, one of the best athletes that we've ever seen in any sport. So we kind of are thinking of him as this, but now he's getting into kind of that range of age where you have to start wondering, like, when is he going to start breaking down? Is he going to start breaking down? And the minute totals for him just kind of compounds on that.
I think the big thing here is that you look at what he is and who he is as an athlete. He's just one of those athletes that is overwhelmingly dominant and just physical. There is no one in the league that is quite able to be 6'8", you know, 240 whatever pounds, however much he actually weighs, run as fast as he does, jump as high as he does, and do all these things. And he's done it really since he was 18 years old, and even younger than that when he was still in high school. He's been just this, maybe the dominant physical force in the NBA for almost his whole career, if not all of it. I mean, there are guys that are close to being that athletic. You have Russell Westbrook, for instance, that just is sheerly just a force in terms of what he can do athletically. But LeBron has done it over a longer period of time. He has done it with also just being supremely skilled and supremely supremely like using his talent in these functional ways. And he also can just sort of turn it on and turn it off. Remember last year there was the whole thing where he lost all that weight and then he didn't look as good, but he took that 2 week sabbatical and then he came back and he was LeBron James. And if he doesn't do it every night like he did when he was 22, he still can just jump over guys. And I mean, there are very few athletes in the NBA that can do what he did in the finals. I mean, the block that he had on Andre Iguodala is one of the most just purely impressive athletic things I've ever seen, because he literally had to go for broke on the other side of the court and come from an awkward angle to even make that a possibility. And to get that high and to hit it as hard as he did, it's just crazy that he's doing that at 31, regardless of how many minutes he's played.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen guys at that level athletically before. I mean, Kevin Garnett in his prime, perfect example. Michael Jordan in his prime. Even rookie Blake Griffin, Russell Westbrook. We've seen guys do this. We've never seen a guy do this for this long without really any level of drop-off. I mean, you look at some of those other guys, like Garnett started to wear down in his early 30s a little bit, where athletically, at least. And then even Jordan, like around this time, started to wear down athletically. But you get LeBron still doing all these things, and I don't think he can do that every night anymore. And I think that's a big part of kind of his transition to the next stage of his career, is like we've already seen that he is kind of, you know, taking a little bit of a backseat from an athletic perspective, not really having those explosive plays as often in the regular season, but really being able to flip that switch, as you said, and turn that on at a moment's notice when he needs to. And I think that's going to be one of the more interesting parts of his transition to the next stage of his career, is how does he manage that on-off switch, and how frequently does he kind of turn it on, and is he able to develop in other ways and change his game to be able to compensate for the fact that he can't go in, night out, and be the most dominantly athletic player on the floor.
Yeah, I mean, before we kind of look at some of the seasons that you wrote about in your piece, he doesn't need to be, you know, all-out LeBron James when it's a random January game against the Brooklyn Nets, right? Like, you don't need him to beat Anthony Bennett and the Brooklyn Nets. Like, you don't need him. But if you want to beat the Warriors, you need him, even not even just for one game, but for seven, because of just all the things that the Warriors are going to be able to do with Durant and Klay and Draymond and everything, and Steph. To look at some of the guys you wrote about, I'm going to hit on a few. You mentioned Garnett. For reference, he's played, you know, over 37,000 minutes, which is actually less than LeBron, which is sort of crazy. Mm-hmm. He's had 8-plus seasons now post-31. He had 5 All-Star level seasons after age 31, and he had some knee injuries in his age 32 season. Now he's just sort of got some old man issues, which are kind of problematic. You have Kobe Bryant, who also LeBron has already passed in minutes, which is sort of crazy. He 6 seasons after his 31st birthday, 3 at All-Star level, and then obviously, as you've watched Kobe Bryant, he had the Achilles tear at age 35, and just sort of was not Kobe even this past season when he had his retirement tour. That was not prime Kobe Bryant, that was a shell of Kobe Bryant. And then you have Dirk, who's played 33,000 minutes, roughly, which almost 34,000. Not as much as LeBron. He's at 6-plus seasons in the NBA after 31. All All-Star level. Hasn't really hit that decline yet, even though he's getting towards the twilight of his career. And there's some other guys on the list, but those to me, because they're modern, because they're contemporary, sort of stand out as the guys you have to compare LeBron to. And Kobe, to me, is the most fascinating, because Garnett functioned a little bit differently than LeBron, because he wasn't just handling the ball as much, and he was doing all these other things. But Kobe, in terms of the sheer just competitiveness and the sheer just taking on that much of a load offensively for a team and having to do all these different things, to me is sort of the one that I look at and say, okay, when does LeBron have a Kobe end of his career? Especially because it was just so drastic when he fell off.
Yeah, I think those are 3 good examples to compare to, just because they kind of hit all the ranges of kind of where this could go. On one hand, you have Kobe, who, you know, continued to basically fight off the aging process for as long as he possibly could, and tried to continue to be the same player that he was even after having all of these issues: the Achilles tear, the fracture in his knee, the rotator cuff tear. I mean, we saw it at the end of last season. He was still trying to plug along, still trying to be the same guy that he had or that he had been in terms of play style. And then you get Garnett, who just changed everything about the way that he played almost. He went from being this overwhelming, physically dominant guy who just did everything for those Timberwolves teams to Celtics era KG, who really focused himself on that one on defense, on that one side of the ball, really kind of matured defensively in the latter part of his career and became this not physically dominant, but just mentally dominant defensive player. And really kind of took a back seat, let Paul Pierce, Ray Allen, and Rajon Rondo really kind of carry the offense while he was able to, you know, he was able to pitch in and kind of pick his spots a little bit more. And I don't see that really, either of those cases really being the way that LeBron goes, just because they're so at the extreme of kind of how a superstar operates in the latter part of his career. And there's Dirk. Dirk's interesting to me just because he's always kind of had that support around him where he's always had a second scorer. He's always had playmakers around him, so he doesn't have to be earning, or he doesn't have to be carrying this huge usage rate being the guy who's initiating everything in Dallas's offense. Now they haven't really been able to maintain kind of that elite playoff level over the last few years, but they've done a really good job of preserving Dirk, and Dirk's done a really nice job of playing to his strengths, delegating things offensively and defensively to teammates, and just kind of letting the team kind of accentuate his strengths and playing to the things that he's still able to do now at age 37, 38. And, you know, he hasn't made the All-Star game every season, but you look at his averages, he's still putting up 18, 19 points a game, 6-7 rebounds a game. And it's there really hasn't been a remarkable drop off in terms of his production, and it's been, in my opinion, because they've been able to do such a good job of keeping him from carrying that huge load, and finding guys who are going to be able to complement his aging game, even though they haven't really had the playoff success or the overall team success that, you know, you'd like to see from this Cavs team. I think that's kind of what you should take away from the table that I put together, is you look at the guys who have had success after age 31, 32, 33, and it's the guys who are able to delegate things, and it's the guys who are able to continue to produce in ways that their game allows them to, without having to carry this huge load or throughout a regular season or throughout a playoffs. It's guys who got help and guys who were able to basically only focus in ways that their bodies would let them, and kind of let their teammates be able to pick up the slack for what they're not able to do anymore.
I think you're hitting on where I was actually going to go next, which is, the Cavs' X factor in terms of LeBron aging is the fact that they have Kyrie Irving and they have Kevin Love. The Cavs could have realistically probably went out and traded for, you know, a Chris. They could have went after someone like Chris Paul, who's a little bit older, and could have theoretically maximized the Cavs' title chances in a short term. I mean, they won the title, so that doesn't matter. They could have went after guys who were, like, right at LeBron's age and went after it. Partially because Love was so available, and partially because they already had Kyrie, they didn't do that. But they have two guys now who theoretically should both. Love is probably in his physical prime.
Mm-hmm.
Kyrie is not. Kyrie is still really young. He's 24. He's not really in his prime years yet. And yeah, you have to hope he holds up, because he has had some just sort of odd injuries, and, you know, you wonder what his ceiling actually is when he, frankly, has been really bad on defense a lot of the time. I mean, he's been really bad in the Olympics. He was really bad in the Olympics, rather. So there's some concerns there. But the Cavs are, in theory, set up to really let LeBron age in a way where he doesn't have to carry everything night in and night out. With Kyrie Irving, you have a guy who can handle the ball the ball on. In Kyrie Irving, you have a guy who can handle the on-ball duties. You have a guy who can handle the scoring load. You have a guy who can, with a little bit more effort, I think, and a little more focus of what he's doing, probably distribute the ball a little bit better. In Kevin Love, depending on how he's used, you have a guy who, for a couple seasons in Minnesota, was a hub of a really, really good offense, and they just haven't used him that way. And I'm writing about that right now, which you'll be able to see soon, hint, hint. But there's a lot there where he doesn't have to go out and be running high pick and rolls and just doing everything night in and out. Like, they have guys there for him.
Yeah, I think that's the big thing for the Cavs now, is being able to put Kyrie and Love in more of a primary role, especially in the regular season. I mean, they've shown over the course of their careers and over the course of their Cavs tenure that on any given night, both of them can carry the offense. We've seen Kyrie do that, obviously, a lot more than we've seen Love do that. But I think that both are pretty well capable, and they can definitely change their offense to be a little less ball dominant on LeBron, and ask him to do a little bit less, and have Kyrie and Love do a little bit more. And I think that's kind of where this team needs to head a little bit heading into the future. And I'm talking not this season, but, you know, 2 years from now, 3 years from now, it's really imperative, I think, for them to be able to use those two in more of a primary role in the regular season. Obviously, in the playoffs, it's a different animal. In the playoffs, actually, that style of play matches up to LeBron's strengths pretty well, and I think that he can be a guy who can, you know, kind of coast in the regular season and then take over in the playoffs. That's that switch flipping that we talked about earlier. Like, that's where I think that's gonna come in handy. And, you know, I think that's on the Cavs a little bit, and that's on LeBron, obviously, a little bit, too, is that that's one of the more interesting questions about all this is LeBron going to be able to delegate things? Is he going to realize that this is something that's going to help prolong his career, potentially, to, you know, drop that usage rate that he's had that's been really high throughout his entire career, and have the ball in his hands a little bit less? And it doesn't need to be a ton. I'm not saying that he needs to suddenly become Wes Matthews and have like a usage rate around like 19-20%. Like, I'm saying he just needs to have, like, you know, 3 to 5 less possessions a game is going to do enough to keep him a little bit more, or it's going to do a little bit to keep him a little less ball dominant and keep him from, you know, having this absurd load that he's carried through at times throughout the last two seasons. It'll be interesting to see if he's willing to do that, or if this, he kind of does become a little bit Kobe-esque and kind of being, you know, I'm 34 in a couple years, and being like, I'm 34. And I'm still going to try to be who I was at 29, 30. I mean, the Cavs have all of the tools, basically, offensively, to accommodate LeBron's aging. It's a question of, are they willing to incorporate Irving and Love? And is LeBron willing to kind of take that step back that we've seen guys like Tim Duncan, guys like Kevin Garnett, guys like Dirk take?
There's so much to unpack with this that it's going to be really, really fascinating to watch it play out. I don't know exactly how it's going to play out. I don't think anybody, but maybe LeBron sort of does. My theory is that it won't be that big of a deal for him, at least in the regular season, because he's not... Kobe was this extension of everything that made Michael Jordan great, taken to the max. Kobe Bryant was just crazy and hyper-competitive and all this stuff, and he had to be the guy. Like, it had to be Kobe. I don't get the sense that LeBron cares as much if he's the guy that's doing that every game, because he's a willing passer. He's got a more of a long-term view than I think other guys have when they look at the NBA and look at where they're going. when it comes down to it, I don't think he's going to shy away from taking over things in the playoffs or taking over things in the regular season, taking over things in big regular season games, or taking over things if they're in Game 7 of the Finals. But if it's a random stretch of the regular season, I totally think he's probably okay with not being that guy and just letting Kyrie and Kevin Love do things. To me, I have two big questions about where this sort of ends up that I think will sort of dictate how this plays out more than his willingness, because I don't have that big of a concern about it. One is, who out of Kyrie and Love is the quote-unquote successor? Is it going to be Kyrie, where the offense won't change as much, or is it going to be Love, where they start getting him a lot more organic touches in the spots he's really good at and build him back up to being the player he was in Minnesota? Or you know, the third option is a hybrid of it. Is it, you know, you kind of swap out LeBron with the bench units and you get a better backup point guard, and maybe it's Kay Felder, and Love does a lot of stuff with the bench units where he's an offensive hub with bench units? Or is it just something like that? The other thing is, what does LeBron's jumper look like over the next 4 years? His jumper this past season, at least especially during the regular season, was the first time I think we've seen him sort of look less of himself. Like, we've seen him not jump as high at times when he's coasting, but we've never just seen his jumper become that much of an issue. It's always been maybe the weakest part of his game, but it was never that much of a glaring weakness. Just, you know, eyeball tested and kind of looking at some of the numbers. Him aging as best as possible, to me, maybe requires him becoming a better off-ball shooter and spotting up and hitting threes, or being a better cutter off the ball and be a more willing cutter, where he's just going to create a little more chaos without having to dribble 5 or 6 times and then run a pick and roll.
Yeah, I mean, that right there is the way that this all happens. I think that's the best way for them to go about this is, you know, it makes things a lot easier to put the ball in Irving and Love's hands if LeBron's able to be more of a weapon without the ball in his hands, because that's part of it. I mean, if the best way to use LeBron at age 34, 35 is still him attacking the rim, that's, I think, a little bit more problematic than, you know, he's still good at that, but, you know, he's also got this now, or if he also had this now, really, really nice spot-up jumper from the corner, or he's able to catch and shoot or slash a little bit out of a catch and shoot situation. I think that's the easiest way for the Cavs offense to remain functional with him, having a little bit less of a load, and Irving and Love having a little bit more of a load. I think that's something that he's gonna be able to continue to work on. I think this kind of year long stretch he had from about February of 2015 to about really March or April of 2016, you know, I think it did kind of get in his head a little bit, and it could be something that he puts a lot of focus on over the next couple of years, is fixing that and really trying to work with his shot to be able to be more of a catch and shoot threat. But you know, we'll have to see kind of where that goes. But I think there's two ways really for him to take really facilitate this in terms of ways that his game could develop. I think that spot up shooting is probably the biggest one, but also just, you know, looking to pass more, and as weird as it is to say, being like a more of a kind of true point guard in play style. Like, he can still have the pick and rolls, but really looking to pass first out of those situations. Because I mean, his ability to run a pick and roll with the court vision that he has, at the height he has, I mean, it's really going to be hard to stop, even if he is not able to get to the rim as easily. You still have the threat because he's LeBron. Defenders are still going to defend him the same way. But if he's looking to pass more, I think that's an advantageous situation for the Cavs to be in, just because that allows them to not really change what they do offensively. I think if they go for that option, then you don't have to ask Love to command all of these elbow touches. If that's not something they want to do, they can still use LeBron as kind of that driving kick guy, and then still have this team of spot up shooters around him. So, you know, I think that's another way that he could develop too, and that might be actually a little bit closer to what we see, just because from the Cavs offense, what we've seen from the guys that they have around him, that's an easy way for them to, or that's an easy way for them to accommodate that, is LeBron's, instead of, you know, trying to work on his jumper and change what they want to do, he's just averaging, you know, 10, 11 assists per game instead of 7 or 8.
Yeah, and I think the other thing here that's important is we have to know, or at least figure out, how much LeBron is going to move into the post as he ages. We know he is resistant to playing in the post a lot in the regular season, but you could really make a strong argument that as he gets older and starts struggling to stay in front of guys at times, or just doesn't want to stay in front of guys, that his best move might be to do what Magic Johnson did and to move more in the post and operate as sort of a point forward. If that happens, Love's fit becomes a little weirder, because you could just have him stand outside on the three-point line, but you're probably not maximizing how he can help LeBron if he's just doing that and LeBron's just, you know, working out of the post. And it just gets a little bit funky there. I think that also, too, is going to be sort of interesting to see if LeBron actually is willing and the Cavs decide to try to maybe have him operate more as a point forward down on the block.
Yeah, that's been what everybody said older LeBron is going to look like for years, and I just don't see it. I just don't see why they would drop him down into the post more and take away the threat of him in the pick and roll, which, you know, even if he's not getting to the rim as effortlessly as he has throughout his career, he's still a threat because of his court vision, and that drop-off's not going to be significant. I don't know why they would drop him down there, make him battle more in the post with bigger guys, make him honestly probably defend those bigger guys more, ask him to rebound more, and take Love out of his preferred spots, and honestly take Tristan out of his preferred spots a little bit too.
I think the Tristan thing is also interesting because he is a long-term piece, and the Love thing is weird just because we haven't actually seen him in his preferred spots a lot of the time in his 2 years with the Cavs, even though they've won a lot of games and they won a title. If you're going to nitpick them over the past 2 years, it's a lot of it is how you're using Kevin Love.
Yeah, it's like it just does not make sense to me why they would try to put him in the post. I don't think he wants that, and I don't think the Cavs want that, because it's really, you know, putting a little bit more physical wear on him, and it really doesn't make sense from an offensive perspective based on the personnel they have and based on the way that they played throughout the past 2 years. I don't think they're going to suddenly look to him to do that, just because they don't really ask anybody to do that in the offense currently. If they're not going to have Love, who's this elite post scorer, take a bunch of post touches, I don't think they're going to suddenly put LeBron in this kind of more uncomfortable position and where he's taking a little bit more of a possession-to-possession beating. Just to, you know, basically, I think just to conform to what people say that LeBron should be when he's 35, 36.
Yeah.
And just because of size, essentially.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think it's interesting a little bit just because of there is a chance with him that as he gets older, maybe he does that. And I think the NBA is heading towards where a guy like him could be super, super awesome at the four. But I agree with you. Pretty much everything you're saying about him not wanting to do it and stuff, you know, it'll be interesting. The other thing that doesn't matter as much here, and it's not really worth going into a ton about, is that he has said that he wants to play in the 2020 Olympics in Tokyo. He'll be 35, I believe, when those Olympics happen 4 years from now. And he'll, you know, have probably considering his tendency to go late into the playoffs and play a lot of minutes over the course of the playoffs, he'll probably have racked up even more and more minutes at that point. So that's something to watch too. Does he actually decide he wants to play in those Olympics? Does he try to keep up that level of willingness to play that much at that age? Does he want to play in the Olympics that summer, even if it's, you know, with a peak Kyrie or some other stuff like that? The last thing I want to touch on, Trevor, is just a very short-term view. Now, Now, heading into next season, the Cavs have won the title. They have done what LeBron really, really needed to do to solidify himself. And there's also just this thing where it just seems inevitable, for the most part, that they are going to probably play in the finals again, and it'll be against the Warriors. The regular season matters, right? But we don't also know exactly how the season's going to play out and all these different things. There's all these variables. Do you think this is the year we maybe start seeing less of LeBron and starting to see LeBron functionally, and not just because there's some drama and because of just his tiredness from 2 years ago, that we actually start seeing the Cavs start waning off the heavy doses of LeBron over 82 games?
Yeah, I think there's certainly potential for that. I think we see more of kind of what we've been talking about, especially with Kyrie. I mean, Kyrie's running this narrative high, and I could very easily see him, you know, taking kind of more of a natural load in terms of game to game in the regular season, and then relying a little bit less on LeBron. I have no idea how Kevin Love factors into that, because, you know, we have been sitting here waiting for him to get that opportunity for 2 years, and it hasn't come. So I just don't know that it's gonna materialize. I think it's much more likely that Kyrie takes a larger role. But I definitely think that, you know, if they're gonna start doing kind of the San Antonio Spurs thing with Tim Duncan, where they start resting LeBron a lot more, like outside of the last 3 weeks of the season, I think that's what happens this year. I think that we're probably going to see maybe like 65 games of LeBron, maybe around that level, just because he's taking some back-to-backs off. He's taking some road trip games off. And it's more planning, kind of, okay, he needs to be in a rhythm. He needs to kind of stay in a rhythm throughout the season. And they need to figure out kind of what they have, depth wise, but you also want him to, you know, be fresh for the playoffs. And I think that they're going to take more of a resting approach with him. And he's not going to play as many games. He might play a similar amount of minutes per game, and he might still get the same, level of usage. But I think that might be a way that this goes, is he doesn't play as many physical games, and in those games where he's not playing, that's where they get, that's where they experiment with, Love getting some of those more, more focal points in the offense.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think 65 seems a tad low for this season. I'm gonna maybe say 70 or so, but I mean, I'm already betting in my head on this number that I'm including. They're playing the Warriors on Christmas Day. They have to play the Pistons the next day. Like, I'm already planning on not having LeBron in the lineup the 26th of December against Detroit. Like, in my head, yeah. That I already have that decided.
Yeah, there's definitely going to be some games where this team just punts on first down. Like, we saw it last year. They were very apathetic going into some games, especially down the stretch. I think we're going to see an accelerated version of that. Like our fellow Fear the Sword contributor Ryan Morton likes to say, like, they were like astoundingly apathetic last season. What is this season with a title in hand going to look like? This could get a little bit shambolic from an aesthetics point of view, but it all has a purpose, I think, this year.
Yeah, I mean, aren't you ready for the Celtics to, like, beat the Cavs 3 times in the regular season? Everyone to be like, oh, the Celtics are going to beat the Cavs.
Like, I'm ready. I'll just be over here pointing out, like,
Iman Shumpert took 20 shots in that game. Like, you think that had something to do with that?
Kay Felder played 35 minutes, okay? Like, let it be. It doesn't matter. It's going to be interesting. I agree. I mean, it's going to be this... This Cavs season, to me, is almost as fascinating as even the previous two, just because of how many things I think are at play. And just... We just assume where it's headed to the point where I just wonder what the regular season's going to look like. And I kind of can't wait to find out. And LeBron playing night in, night out is obviously a huge part of what that looks like. Because he sets the tone for everything.
Yeah. You know, it'll be interesting to see kind of how they handle kind of having some new challengers this year. It's like, I think a lot of what the season is going to look like depends on what Boston looks like, depends on what Atlanta looks like, depends on what Detroit looks like. Just because, like, you know, last year I think they were able to rest on their laurels a little bit because it was really just them and Toronto in terms of jockeying for position in the standings. This year I think it gets a little bit more interesting just because I think there's a deeper second level, and you know, if one of those teams really outperforms expectations, I think things could get a little interesting for them, especially if the Cavs kind of go in wanting to manage their minutes, manage the season a little bit more, and they find themselves, you know, December 25th down like four games in the standings in the East, and they're like the two or three seed. Like, yeah. It's going to be interesting to see what happens if that's kind of how things play out.
Yeah, it's really, really going to be such a fascinating season. I can't wait for it. We're so far away, you know, from it really. I mean, we're still in August. We still have a month really until media day. We have almost 2 months until the regular season starts. I really, really can't wait. I'm getting antsy a little bit, to be honest. But, you know, I'm excited. I'm excited to see what this looks like. And, you know, obviously, Trevor and I will be at Fear the Sword covering stuff. But Trevor, where can people find you on Twitter? And are you working on anything cool right now that you think people would like?
You can find me on Twitter at Illegal Screens. And the biggest thing I think I'm starting to work on now is I'm starting to get our European league previews ready for over at Upside and Motor, which those seasons start in about a month. So kind of getting things organized and keeping track of where guys are. It's especially good for Cavs fans to pay attention to those because there's a bunch of, you know, our favorites from the LeBron-less era over there. Semi Erdens playing at the top level. Luke Herangode's over there. Christian Ayanga's over there. Samardo Samuels just signed a contract in China, so did JJ Hickson. So definitely if you want to keep tabs on the guys that we were watching 5 years ago, keep a lookout for that stuff.
Yeah. And Trevor, I'm just not saying this because he's on the podcast and because he's a friend, but he probably knows more about European basketball than anybody that I know and that I follow on Twitter, so make sure you follow him, check out his work. He is not, in fact, Kurt Rambis, in case any of you think that. But I want to thank Trevor again for coming on. You can find me on Twitter at CWMWrites. You can find the podcast on Twitter at LockedOnCavs. As always, anytime, feel free to submit questions for our Monday mailbag to Twitter at LockedOnCavs and to our email at LockedOnCavs@gmail.com. Again, like us and rate us on iTunes if you're a fan of the podcast because it helps other people find it. And we will talk to you guys on Monday for a mailbag. So please get those questions in, and we'll talk to you soon.